Thank you very much. Colleagues, I'm going to build on a lot that has been said before. It's great to be at a conference with such a tight focus because you can actually engage with what's been said before. So I'm going to build on a few of the points that have been made already and try and get a sense of what we can do as communicators and as researchers in this rather volatile situation. So we've been asking the question, well, what is fake news and how new is it? And is it really a problem? And we've said that, first of all, fake news is simply lies. And if we approach it from that angle, we can say, well, it's really nothing new. We've seen a lot of lies in the past. What I think is important is that we don't conflate lying, which is not really what is worrying us, and the distribution of lies. And this is where we've really seen changes over the last few years even. So, and if this is true, if there is lies, if there is the distribution of lies, then we have ways of tackling it. We can put out our own content, statements that aren't lies, and we can address the distribution of lies on the level of strategy. Now, from our perspective as researchers, this in itself isn't what concerns us. And I have to say, personally, for me, the shock of the American election outcome wasn't the outcome itself. It wasn't that Trump was elected, which is bad enough. The real shock for me was that we didn't see it coming. So what I want to argue is, we have a problem that we didn't predict it. We were way out, and the case is slightly different across European countries. Polling tends to be better in German elections, for example. But what we can see, I think, is that our way of modeling society is in crisis. Our way of seeing what social changes are occurring is in crisis. Because the lying and the distribution of lies has real effects. It leads to a realignment within society. And the way to tackle that is what we call research and what we can call preparation. We talked a lot about preparation. 50% of communication is preparation. So exploring the basis of what we do. And this is important because if we don't do it, that social change feeds back and leads to new false statements. And if we do our job well, then we do what all content producers want to do, get people engaged in the production of their content as well. And this is true, and this is relevant, I should say, for both political communication and corporate communications. The way we think about target groups, the way we think about milieus, is something that we need urgently to rethink. So what I would like to do is look at the example of Brexit. I want to try and find out why a campaign that was so deeply flawed was so incredibly successful, in order then for us to get a sense of what we can do about it. So what I want to do here is see how the Brexit campaign worked. I want to argue that focusing on facts alone, I'm going to build on what Adrian just said, is not going to be the way out, is not going to save communications, is not going to save democracy. And I want to then apply it to the situation in Britain today and put forward a maybe rather surprising thesis. So how did the Brexiteers do it? From the point of fact checkers, it looked like this. The Leave campaign put out a lot of statements that were incredibly vague. Yeah? The UK is a great country. We want to scrap European regulations, yet which one? Well, we don't quite know. Many statements were simply wrong. The whole notion that Britain is somehow being colonized by the EU. And a lot of the campaign was contradictory. So on the one hand, we get a sense of we want to secure our borders, we want to keep the foreigners out. But then there's the notion that we want to be a global country. We don't want to be tied to just Europe. We don't want to be inward looking into just Europe, which you heard a lot and which flatly contradicts what I said first. And the Remain campaign, which I was involved with, consistently ran the risk of being a giant fact-checking operation. And it was very good at pointing out, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, and it ended up being behind the times consistently and being a commentator rather than an actor. The Remain campaign was incredibly... The mood in the Brexit campaign was aggressive, but the Remainers kept appearing as the party poopers. So, and people simply didn't care. When Michael Gove said, the British people have had enough of experts, the irony is that that was one of the few things he said that were actually true. So, this is where we have two choices as communicators, I think. Option one is to say, the majority of people are dumb, gullible, and irresponsible. And we can discount them, and we find better ways to exploit their weaknesses in the future. And this, of course, is not the way forward that I would recommend. It would be against the spirit of democracy, and it would be very unsatisfying because we still wouldn't understand what we actually missed in the Brexit campaign. The second option is to find out what the Leave voters, what the Brexiteers, actually saw in the campaign. Because 52% of people didn't seem to see vagueness, falsehoods, and contradictory statements. They saw something else. So the question is, really, why did people not care? So I want to step back for a second. Because what I think has rarely been pointed out, that facts aren't what makes politics. Facts aren't politics. Facts and focusing on facts are the hallmark of a very particular political discourse. And it's very often the people who focus on facts who do so in order to discount ideology. So in the mid-90s, we saw the emergence of what was then called the Third Way, or the Neue Mitte, and it was supposed to be post-Cold War politics, post-ideological. We simply do what the facts suggest. And if you look at it from this angle, and if you look at these two images in particular, you'll see that Gerhard Schröder and Angela Merkel, for all their differences in personality and in style, are actually of the same ilk. Yeah? They're both technocrats. They're both moderates, although only one of them arguably is a moderator. And they've both been successful. Yeah? Schröder got labor market reforms passed that his predecessor didn't even envisage. And Frau Merkel got a lot of things done in her quiet way. Now, what both of them have, the price they've both paid was the diminishing role of their own parties. Schröder lost the left wing of his own party, Frau Merkel lost the right wing of hers. And they both didn't seem to care. They both don't seem to mind, because they're not party politicians, they're technocrats. Look at this. We've got the sight of 1 million people, maybe 2 million, one of the largest gatherings in human history, in the streets of London protesting against the Iraq war. And here's the technocrats saying, I don't care. The technocrats' answer is to say, the mood in the population, I'm not going to take it into account. The populists' response to a few people in San Francisco airport, I mean, this is the beauty of political communication in the Trump era, is that Trump actually cares about what people think. He actually wants to be loved. So we can have an impact as citizen protesters here. So the insistence on facts, I would argue, is the domain of politicians of the center ground, pragmatists, technocrats, the children of the 1960s idea of political cybernetics. And if we look at generations and generational change, the underlying factor that we can look at is what theories did these generations grow up with that are shaping their mindsets. So if we look into the future, the post-2025 generation, we can already look at, well, what are the theories that they're growing up with? What are the concepts? But again, this is not what democracy is. It's not what politics is. Politics is not about finding out who's right and who's wrong. Politics is not an IQ test, neither for politicians nor for voters. It's very important. So, and this gets us to the situation about how far can you get by lying? What are the real effects of false statements? Isn't the whole Brexit campaign about real people? Isn't it about real people instead of just the numbers? And this is where it's going to be interesting to see when they diverge and when the promises aren't kept, what the Brexit campaign successes communication strategy is going to be. I want to argue that in the meantime, before we see that collapse of the Brexit campaign's promises, we need to acknowledge that Leave voters, 52% of the British public, did not just saw vagueness and falsehoods and contradictions in the Brexit campaign, but what they saw was a compelling narrative. And what's astonishing was, yes, they felt it was a compelling narrative for them that appealed to them, but it was also the only narrative available. The Remain campaign did not have a narrative. It had the facts. It was a battle between the facts and the story. Look at these images. We've got facts in the form of research-based predictions in a succinct statement, I admit that. But it is a policy of Sachzwänge, that beautiful German word. It's a policy that keeps emphasizing us as politicians, we're actually incredibly limited. We're simply forced to react to what's going on. And the Brexit strategy was to go beyond that and say, look, here's what we want to do. And it was a way for politicians to assert their influence. Same thing. I was a language teacher for a while, and I always told students, look at the little words. We must and we want. Would you rather be with the we must people, or would you rather be with the we want people? I want to be with the we want people, I have to say. And I didn't. I wasn't a Brexiter, and I'm not. So the difference between Merkel and Boris Johnson and Farage isn't so much a policy disagreement, but it's a disagreement in the approach to politics. We want to take back control versus a pragmatic but also fatalist sense of this is what we have to do, we have no choice. And we've talked about Alternativlosigkeit ad nauseam in recent years. But what it doesn't include is a sense of what do we want to schaffen anything? Do we want it? And what is das to start with? And this is the big opportunity for technocrats not to abandon the facts, not to abandon research. Just as Adrian just said, you have to build on it. You have to be truthful. You have to deal with the world as it is. But to go beyond being a technocrat and be a centrist again, have a vision, have a story, have the faces to put on your facts and on your vision. So why is this so difficult? Yeah, right. Let's look at what has happened since that campaign. Two things have happened. The first thing is that the government under Theresa May has done everything in its power to make the Brexit process as intransparent and democratic as possible. It's tried to deny Parliament a vote on the triggering of Article 50, and when the highest court in the land ruled against the government was very, very slow to defend the independence of the judiciary. Accusations of treason are very serious. It's still trying to deny Parliament a vote on the outcome of negotiations. And it's doing so with absolutely minimal intellectual effort. Yeah, Brexit means Brexit is still 9 months into the situation, as much as we get, the white paper notwithstanding. But what we get is the people have spoken, we've had the campaign, Brexit is Brexit. Thank you very much. So in as much, So in as much as the Brexit campaign was never about substantial proposals for the time after Brexit, currently we do not know what that future is going to look like and what the British government wants it to look like. We're not being told. I've never seen such an absence of communication, political communication. There is absolutely nothing. And the second thing that has happened is that the opposition has decided that they've lost the referendum and they're going to give up on everything they believe in. We've had the referendum, the people have spoken, goodbye. I've never seen anything like it. A complete abandonment of Remain positions, with very few exceptions. So, and this is, I mean, this is a choice that Remainers and the Labour Party have made. It would be absolutely easy and possible to say, well, what is it that the referendum has decided? What have they decided with regard to the future of immigration policy, welfare, the health system? We don't know. We simply do not know. And we need politicians to communicate what they think the referendum means. So in that sense, I'm going to say there's been no referendum. There's been no referendum about these issues. We do not know. And we need politicians to be politicians and start having a story, fact-based, research-based, and well-communicated that is telling us where we're going. The irony, of course, is twofold. One is that the Brexiteers have abandoned the few statements they've actually made in the campaign. And these retractions of their key promises are not from the last few weeks in the process of the preparation of Article 50, the triggering of Article 50. All these retractions by key Brexit campaigners of their key promises were made in the first 48 hours after the announcement of the result. The second irony is that the only people pointing this out are unelected. And the third irony for policy geeks like me, politics geeks, is that the only people who are elected in the House of Lords are the aristocrats, whose predecessors have been sitting there for generations, because they actually need to stand for election. So to sum up, the success of the Brexit campaign is not just due to the shrewdness of its protagonists or the foolishness of voters. I think we need to get away from that idea. Brexiteers offered a vision, a story of Britain post-EU. This vision was flawed, but it was a compelling alternative was not offered. Remainers relegated themselves to the role of fact-checkers. Facts are important, but political leadership and political communication requires a vision, a face, and a story. Not a fictional story, but a story nonetheless. And this is a real opening for us. This is an opportunity. This is a good thing. This is where things get exciting for us. There is an opening for visions for our community, rooted in research, rooted in knowing what people care about, what the lives of people are really like. And I am looking forward to developing these new strategies and finding better ways of tracking the social change that we've seen in the wake of the distribution of fake news. Thank you very much. Now I'm done.